Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Back to Basics. I still remain Pastor Don, despite all efforts to the contrary, and I am joined by the lovely, the magnificent, the wonderful, the various other words, Courtney.
Hey.
So
you get it out of existence. That's weird.
I know. It's kind of the fun of using virtual backgrounds is that you can blink in and out of existence. I don't do too much with my hands. Oh, I got to admit, my camera's doing a lot better today.
It's doing it pretty well. There's a fine outline, but it's not that bad.
Yeah.
I intentionally picked something with the correct lighting and ambiance. So,
of course, those who are following along on the podcast are now completely confused. So,
I'm currently on the 11th Doctor's first TARDIS design.
And I'm currently in a nondescript French villa, a chateau, if you will, a grape processing facility.
He's at Picard's house.
Of course it's Picard's house. Come on. Who are you talking to?
You don't have to pontificate about everything.
Have you met me?
Yes. That's why I'm pleading with you, my dude.
All right. So we are moving on from our nice little diversion in our 50th episode extravaganza, which was really just the two of us talking about something different for a change, which is extravagant enough, honestly. And today we are moving back into the basics of the Bible, so to speak, and we are digging into Genesis chapter 33, which is going to resolve the cliffhanger we left off with in, believe it or not, Genesis chapter 32, where Jacob was on his way to meet the approaching armies of Esau and all of his various men, and he was so freaking out that he sent a caravan of gift giving. Like, this guy is going to mess me up. So we now resume our story already in progress, or perhaps more appropriately, and now the conclusion.
All right. You want me to read?
Yeah, why don't you? This is a good, simple, straightforward one. Not much Hebrew in here, I think. I think you'll be able to manage.
Okay. Let's see here.
Give me a minute to drink my coffee. Which I should not do because it's still very hot.
Do you have a neat geeky cup or anything? No?
No. It's just a simple Starbucks roastery cup that we got when we were visiting the Reserve Roastery in Tokyo.
Neat coffee cups are becoming my thing. But anyway, it can be 40 another time. Okay. Now Jacob looked up and saw Esau coming and 400 men with him. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two maids. He put the maids with their children in front, then Leah with her children, and Rachel and Joseph last of all. He himself went on ahead of them, bowing himself to the ground 7 times until he came near his brother. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. When Esau looked up and saw the women and children, he said, "Who are these with you?" Jacob said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." Then the maids drew near, they and their children, and bowed down. Leah likewise and her children drew near and bowed down. And finally, Joseph and Rachel drew near and they bowed down. Esau said, "What do you mean by all this company that I met?" Jacob answered, "To find favor with my Lord." But Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." Jacob said, "No, please. If I find favor with you, then accept my present from my hand. For truly, to see your face is like seeing the face of God, since you have received me with such favor. Please accept my gift that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have everything I want." So he urged him, and he took it. Then Esau said, "Let us journey on our way, and I will go alongside you." But Jacob said to him, "My Lord knows that the children are frail, and that the flocks and herds which are nursing are a care to me. And if they are overdriven for one day, all the flocks will die. Let my Lord pass on ahead of his servant, and I will lead on slowly according to the pace of the cattle that are before me, and according to the pace of the children, until I come to my Lord in Seir." Scroll up here. Okay. So Esau said, "Let me leave with you some of the people who are with me." But he said, "Why should my Lord be so kind to me?" So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. But Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built himself a house and made booths for his cattle. Therefore, the place is called Succoth. Jacob reaches Shechem. Is it Shechem?
Chichem, yeah.
Chichem? Okay. Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, on his way from Paddan. Dude, you said there wasn't that much Hebrew. And he came up before the city. And from the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father, he bought for 100 pieces of money the plot of land on which he had pitched his tent. There he erected an altar and called it El Elohe Israel. Okay. Since I had to read first, you have to give me your thoughts, because I need to get a drink of water after that one.
Okay. So, we finally get the reunion of Jacob and Esau. And Jacob has been living in fear of this. Do you remember why?
Dude, do you know how long it's been since we last recorded?
Jacob's been living in fear of this because he royally fucked over Esau with the whole father's blessing thing.
Right, right. Yep.
And yeah. Then hightailed it out of town in a hurry, right back to Laban, where he got kind of tied up with the whole I can't tell women apart issue. and so he spent years and years there before getting chased out of that city and finally comes face to face with Esau again. So Jacob here is developed in his time with Laban. He's developed enough of a sense of self-reflection to realize, you know what? Esau's probably fucking pissed. Like, I would be if I were him. Like, I definitely screwed this man over and I took the blessing. And in the end, look at all this. Like, that blessing seems to have paid off. I've got herds and flocks and one wife and two wives because I can't tell them apart. So I just took them both. Like, life has been good to me in the way that it is good to men in this society. So, like, awesome for me, but this was all supposed to have been his. So, shit.
I'd be pissed if I were him.
Exactly. So he's riding into this situation, assuming this man is going to want to kill me. And, you know, Esau isn't exactly like presenting a dissuading front to that from a distance, because he's rocking up with 400 men. Like, Esau is not coming with his nomadic tribe here. Let's be clear about this. This is not two nomadic tribes meeting in transit. This is Jacob and his nomadic tribe meeting a small army led by his brother Esau. So these are two different things with two different purposes. Esau's wife and kids and everything else that he has are elsewhere. It's just him and all of his guys. We in the Western mind would tend to assume they're all riding horses, or that could just be because I've just been watching The Lord of the Rings, but you know, you get the image. So they're rocking up there, armed to the teeth, getting ready for a full-on Helm's Deep, and Jacob is shitting his pants. So,
as you do.
So he divides up the kids, he sends, you know, present, train, does everything he can think of to soften Esau's heart that he is assuming is one way. And he shows up and he rocks up, and what's Esau's reaction? Dude, you're my brother. Like, it's all good. Like, that right there is my favorite moment, because it stresses to us two things. One, oftentimes, and this is not to put the onus always on the victim of an injustice, but there is a power that a victim has when the victimizer is repentant, at least. There's a power that they have to resolve a situation that no one else has. Now, you'll notice, I should say, before argument arises here in the comments section and everything explodes and fire and death and destruction, that when the victimizer or the oppressor is repentant is very much key to what I just said. When you are dealing with an unrepentant oppressor, this model, not appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Context is always important.
Always. Now, this is really the thing here, because we have an instinct as humans, right? You know, when someone's done us wrong, they're like, look, dude, I'm sorry. We're like, okay, time for you to do your Hail Marys and your attributions, and you got to give me this and you got to give me that, and I got to whip you 10 times over the back with a hard birch rod, and then maybe you're going to embarrass yourself publicly. Like, we start coming up with, all right, you think I'll make it up to me? At no point does Esau ever do that. And I think that is extremely important. And Essa would have had the right to do that, to say, all right, you've apologized. Now it's your turn to make up for what you have done. And that Essa never claims that right. And that is arguably the most fundamentally Christian act we find in the Old Testament. Not, of course, to put Christianity above Judaism, but it portrays to our teachings of Jesus is what I'm saying. That is the core of this story in that way, is that SL's like, yeah, don't worry about it. Like, look at me. Like, look at what's behind me. All that I have now.
I'm doing all right for myself.
I'm doing all right. Like, in that moment, I was pretty damn pissed, but life has gone on. You clearly have done well by yourself. And let me be clear, I've done well by myself too. And I wouldn't have what I have if I hadn't gone through what we had gone through. So, all right. Well, cool. I'm happy with this. I can settle with this without making you, go through penances of various creativities. So right there is a good example for us. But, I'm gonna put that out there, and I want to get your opinion on that now, because that's my take. And
The context, and the whole time I'm reading this, I'm like, I want to hear Don explain this, because I know I don't have all of the...
You have got to be the only person out there who's like, I want to hear Don talk more. Nobody thinks that.
No, I'm doing this series because I'm interested in what the Bible actually says.
I know.
And I'm not going to seminary, but you did. So I can pester you about it. And then we can record it for the whole internet to look at. That's the whole point of the show, right?
Which, by the way, hi, internet. We're so glad that you're here for this. So that's the general take of it, though, is like, this is the core of that. But I want to know what you take of the direction it twists from here. So Esau is all about, good, let's come together. Let's reconcile. Come join me at Seir, which is where he's living at the time. Come be with my family and be with my people.
I got that one right. I got Seir right.
Yeah.
Yay.
So Esau's like, come with me. And Jacob's like, no, you guys are strong and full and on your own. You'll be too fast and I can't push my flocks at her. Why don't you go on ahead? Go on ahead. And so some back and forth. I said, like, okay, go ahead. We'll meet you at Seir. And then we get verses 16 and 17. So Esau returned on that day on his way to Seir. But Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built himself a house and made booths for his cattle. Therefore, the place is called Succoth. Jacob did not go to there. So what do you make of that? Anything?
I had a hard time even registering it. I get lost in the wording sometimes, even when it's as plain as it can be.
That's fair. In that situation, you'd kind of expect, like, the reconciliation has happened. SL said, we're all good, don't worry about it. You would expect that, and then they went off together into the sunset, happy and reconciled, and started working together again as brothers. Jacob kind of tells Esau to piss off again. Like, he politely sends him on his way with a bit of deception and then rolls himself off to somewhere else entirely. And, like,
builds a house.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, Esau does eventually come back into the story much later on. But, like, from here, we're going into the rape of Dinah, and then from there into the story of Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat and all that. Like, all of that and the sons of Jacob, that's what comes next. So, like, this is the end of the reconciliation story, is Jacob's like, no, uh-uh. No, could be a trap. I think it's a trap. And I think this is, like, a real key piece in human interactions around reconciliation, is that Esau here is extending a hand of trust. But Jacob, despite the fact that he is willing to self-reflect and admit his wrongdoing, he's not willing to go that final step of extending trust himself, which is kind of the last part of the process. Like, you've got the self-ownership, you've got the admitting you made a mistake, the wanting to take responsibility for it. You have the other side saying, it's okay, and meeting for that reconciliation. But the last step of the process is to trust that the other person's being honest with their reconciliation. And, you know, maybe it's the fact that Esau showed up with a small army instead of just a couple of guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, in fairness, human nature sometimes.
Yeah.
Not the best.
But, and this is my point here strictly, is that reconciliation requires risk. And this was a situation where I suspect things may have gone even better for the family of Jacob had they reconciled here. Or perhaps not, because we've still got that famine and drought and everything that's coming up and the whole Joseph story. So maybe this was God's redirection. There are different ways to look at that, I'm sure. But in the end, Jacob gets almost all the way there and then fumbles at the goal line, which is the one sports metaphor you'll ever hear me make. Like, he literally drops the ball, and that's it for this relationship. Like, we don't really get the two of them coming back together in this way ever again, I don't think.
That's really shitty. Because yeah. I was reading, I will say this, that was one thing I wanted to say when I was reading through this. It felt good to read. It felt genuine, like, yeah, this is this really heartwarming, like, reconciling moment. I was like, holy cow, there are some, like, nice, happy stories in the Bible. Mm-hmm. But then, you know.
And how often does it happen where we get close to that, where we're having those reconciliatory conversations? We're like, yeah, all right, we've said our sorries. I don't want to have you as part of my life. Bye. Like, that happens. That's a human thing. That happens a lot more than it should, honestly. Where, like, we have the apologies, but then we're just like, no. Like, and that's not a real reconciliation, is it? Like, it's not being able to re-explore the thing that made us close in the first place. It's simply saying that we no longer hold you liable for the reason we separated in the first place, but then continuing to bear the effects of that separation forever on forward. Like, it's kind of a false reconciliation in the end, which is sad. And that often rests on one person. Like, we each have to sacrifice of ourselves in order to make a reconciliation work. And Esau seems to be willing to make that sacrifice. On the assumption that Esau's reconciliation motives were legitimate. He did rock up with 400 dudes. It's possible, I guess, and I have to look at this logically, it's possible Esau's motives could have been, I'm going to trap him and take all his shit. Like, that could have been a thing. But I'm operating under the assumption that Esau's motives were pure, because of the way he acts and the way he behaves seem to indicate it. At least as far as the literary analysis of the text goes. So, assuming he's legit, yeah, it's Jacob dropping the ball here. Like, he gets right up to the end, and he's just like, I'm not going to go that last extra step. And that redirects the story into some very dark places.
And at the same time, the story thus far, would point to that maybe being a wise call, like, no, don't trust this person. They're holding a grudge. They are absolutely holding a grudge and are trying to trick you and kill you.
Alternatively, though, it's worth looking out for the fact that the story of Jacob is one where the people who have done the most trickery are the people who have had no cause to, the people who have come in peace. Like, he tricked his brother for no damn reason. Laban was supposedly there to help him and was not screwing him over until he did. And Laban continued to do that under the guise of peace and gaslighting at some points. And so when it comes to here, where you have Esau showing up with the hand of peace, Jacob is suspicious, it seems. And honestly, part of the reconciliation process is recognizing our lived-in trauma as well, so that we don't dismiss the real thing because we've been presented with the false thing so many times, or been the false thing so many times.
Jacob, and, of course, then, like, how do you know that without, you know, knowing that you're, you know, questioning if you're, oh, I'm doing this again or whatever. Like, I'm.
This is the point where I talk about the spiritual gift of gullibility. Like, you know, a good part of living a truly spiritual, open life is bearing the consequence of deceit and damage by putting yourself out there like that. And yeah, like it's a bit of a gamble, I'll admit, but sometimes to borrow from another sci-fi franchise, sometimes you got to roll the hard six. You know, sometimes you just got to put it out there and say, I'm going to do this thing. It looks like a trap. If it were me, it would be a trap, but I cannot say no when someone has presented this kind of an opportunity for reconciliation and for peace and for love and for mercy. Never say no to love. That's my theory. And that's why I'm a millionaire. So I think that kind of gets us to the end. We get our last little snippet at the end of Jacob coming safely to the city of Shechem in the land of Canaan on his way from Paddan Aram. He camps before the city. And he starts interacting with the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father. And this is going to play into our next episode, wherein Shechem himself, son of Hamor the Hivite, is going to do a real bad, the baddest of bads.
Yeah, trigger warning for the next episode, please.
Yeah, trigger warning for the next episode. We are talking about sexual assault of the most massive degree. That's a thing that's happening. And you know, if we're giving that trigger warning in a book that's already treating women as well as it does, you know it's going to be a fun one. So if that's something that you just can't stick with, feel free to give the next episode a pass. Otherwise, if you want to figure out what we're going to talk about with Dina and her experiences, tune into the next episode. Any last questions before we call it a day here?
I ask our viewers / listeners to send me thoughts and prayers for dealing with the next episode, but
yeah,
by the time you see this, it's already been recorded.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one. So that being said, just call your attention to a few things. I love producing these videos. I really do. Courtney, I'm sure, does too, when she's not mad at me for beating her over the head with the weirdness in the Bible. But these are just a small foretaste of the glory of the kingdom at hand. No, I mean, really what they are is they're just a small piece of our giant church community, which isn't actually giant, but I say because it's fun. We have actually a pretty big Discord community, big by my standard, that's growing pretty well. That's actually our center of our church. Like the church itself, we're based in Japan. We have a physical.
It's still it's a pretty intimate Discord community still.
But intimate is.
That's not a bad thing.
Yeah. And it's funny, by the way, because as a side note, like these adjectives are weird because describing Discord community as big would mean like hundreds and hundreds, but describing church as big, like we've got 50 or 60 people on there, which is pretty big for a mainline church. So, you know, take your pick as to which category of adjective you mean to imply here. But it is intimate. There's a lot of discussion, a lot of conversation. Sometimes we're just making fun of the wealthy and the powerful. Sometimes we're talking about the Bible. Sometimes we're just sharing our laments at our sufferings at the hand of the wealthy and the powerful, you know, typical Christian stuff. So you are welcome to be there with us. We would love to see you join us. I also want to invite you to check out our Pride video, which by the time this is airing, it should still be June. So you should be able to catch that. It's going to stay up regardless anyway, because it's kind of a big deal for us, but I want to invite you to check that one out. We've got some really good stories from folks in our community that are talking about what it means to be part of the LGBT community and a Christian at the same time. It's a good watch, and I really want to promote that one to you. In the meantime, come join us, comment down below, and then if you have a second, do the thing that Courtney's now going to tell you to do.
Oh, yeah, like, share, subscribe.
Oh, yeah, all those things, which are fun for the doing of stuff. So pass it around and spread the good news by sharing a video of us sharing the good news so you don't have to. So yeah, that's what we call evangelicalism by default. All right. So have a good week.
By proxy.
Yeah, evangelicalism by proxy. I love it. All right. Have a good week, y'all, and we will catch you in the next episode. Take care. Bye.
Bye.